You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'll be speaking with Cindy Baxter, author of the Isaka Journal column, IS Audit in Practice. In this episode of the podcast, we'll be discussing Cindy's Isaka Journal Volume 1 article, Watching Out for Workforce Risk in the New Normal. Thank you for joining me, Cindy.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, in your article, you state workforce is the risk that cuts across all critical business factors, and the role of technology to shape behavior cannot be underestimated. Could you elaborate on this relationship between technology and behavior?
Yes, definitely. I think that the latest occurrences with the pandemic, with technology really being ubiquitous, that technology has had an ever-increasing role in behavior. Why is that? First of all, as I mentioned, pandemic, everyone is remote, and sometimes the easiest source of information is a technology-facilitated source of information. So it puts technology front and center, where people are trying to get information and then considering how they're going to act and behave. The second item is regarding personal experience. We've been faced with a number of events that have really not occurred in the recent past. And people may have seen things on TV or on social media highlighting people who have made it through the pandemic of 1914 or 17 when influenza hit. And of course, those folks are few and far between. In fact, many things that are happening to us today simply don't have a group of people that have gone through it before. So what ends up happening where personal experience doesn't exist is that people rely on technology because it's easy, they don't have somebody to go to, and they need to understand how to put this in the context of what they do next. I think the third factor that makes technology and behavior more intimately linked than ever before is that the source of truth that we all seek is now more often than ever facilitated by technology. But it's still controlled by media blocks. So I might watch PBS NewsHour, or I might rely on Facebook, or maybe I don't look at any of that and I just quickly catch a Twitter feed. Whatever that venue is going to present to me, most often by technology, is going to influence my behavior significantly because that's what I think, that's what I view to be true, especially if I'm in lockdown, or especially if I'm not connected to my workforce because now I'm working remotely on my own. So those are what I would consider to be the three top things to keep in mind.
In your article, you discuss how successful managers can use a team approach to minimize conflicting priorities while establishing much-needed responsibility. Can you say more about the risk of leaving employees to their own devices?
Yeah, that's a great question, Abby. I think, again, because we all have a much smaller world, working more in isolation, all of us want to have a sense of control over what we're doing. Not that we ever didn't want to have a sense of control before, but we're uniquely situated where everyone feels that need to sort of do it themselves. How does management or leadership in general make sure that do-it-yourself activity is really as constructive as possible and goes in the right direction? So I think, again, with that idea that everybody wants to do the right thing, but everyone has a different view of what the right thing is, that team leadership allows a degree of coordination across common objectives. So when we think of team leadership, it truly is that coordination that shows what the objectives are and how they are uniform. That's not necessarily to say that as leaders come together across different disciplines, to make sure the workforce understands what's going on, that all the objectives are absolutely in line. But when they're working together, when they take that team approach, then what the workforce sees is a consolidated effort, a strategic effort to move forward. And that's energizing. The second thing I think is critical for the team approach versus leaving employees to their own devices, if you will, is leadership transparency in terms of communications. Because as the workforce considers the new normal and what has to be done, how everybody hears reality is really important. Understanding, again, really to your previous question, that everybody might come from a different space. There's no longer the standard work group that's available to us in the office. Of course, everybody is using technology facilitated by web meetings, by conference bridges, but it's still not the same, and everybody creates their own vision. As leadership communicates in an open and honest way, and does so frequently, what they end up doing is setting goals and objectives with a strategic tone, which, again, not all the objectives may be the same, but it's that team of leaders as the management teams together and talks about the common objectives, the view by the workforce of what needs to happen next, where should I take initiative by myself, versus when should I ask, when should I use a certain source, becomes much clearer. Team leadership also allows people to feel more connected. So everybody feels a different level of isolation because of the new workforce environment. There certainly is a large percentage of people who like working remote. There are people who also still thrive on interconnectedness. And the new technology absolutely allows a degree of interconnection. But when the team approach is used by management, it does cut through the isolation. And it does allow people to feel confident about doing certain things on their own, the DIY attitude, because everybody can see that joint approach. For example, one might have a manager in human resources, the technology manager who's controlling the infrastructure and critical applications, and the security manager all collaborating in terms of how they're going to strategize and get through what the workforce is using, how the tools are used, regardless of the disciplines that they each employee might be responsible for within an enterprise. When those managers get together in the team approach and questions come in from the workforce that talk about how should I use this application if I'm at home? How do I make sure that I'm checking in on perhaps the access requirements now that I can't print in the office, but I've got to now maybe send it to my personal email? What does that mean from security's perspective? As HR, as technology, as security present a common front, people understand in a much more holistic fashion that they're really not isolated, that they are part of the whole, and they can get a sense for what they need to have under control by understanding what those control points are from the management team.
Certainly. So the team approach is one of the four guidelines that you say information access managers and information security teams can both follow to be successful. In addition to addressing change dynamically, communicating transparently, and focusing on control. Of these four, is there any single suggestion that you find to be especially important?
You know, it's an interesting question because everything is so interconnected, but you did hit the nail on the head. There are, in this case, two items that I might point out. Although all four success factors, I think, are great contributors to a positive outcome, I think that transparency and control are very closely linked. Transparency for some of the items that I mentioned in our previous conversation, because people need to make sure that they're not forming their own truths within a vacuum, that they're not using technology and making assumptions that management really didn't anticipate. So transparency gives the ability to build a foundation of information, and employees then have a context from which to do their work. But you can't just communicate and let people know what's going on. You can't just tell them what you're doing next as a manager. You have to set boundaries. And for that reason, I think that second capstone is control, which in my mind really talks about setting expectations. So while you're transparent with what's going on, what you're doing, how the business is moving forward, what the priorities are, you always have to conclude with those expectations so that once again, the workforce can understand objectives, how they fit in, what they can control, and when they should relinquish control, as well as understanding perhaps what is good access? Why do I need to have this narrow path? When should I ask a question about perhaps doing more? So that balance between understanding what's going on, which I believe is through transparent communications, and understanding what's expected of me because management has those specific controls in place and I know what they are, really sets the tone for a successful outcome.
So we've talked about the importance of working together as a team, but in your article, you state heightened risks could be lurking from within the enterprise given personal stress in such unusual times. You also describe an example scenario wherein a fictitious employee states, "Everyone's family here. We all know we can trust each other." Though at the end of the example, we learn this attitude has made the enterprise vulnerable. Could you speak more to the rise of internal threat and how that can be mitigated?
Ultimately, everybody is very much connected to their circle of friends, of colleagues, of family. And of course, we all want to make sure that we're operating in an environment of trust. And just as I was speaking before about transparency, we all know that transparency has its own limitations, and those limitations come around privacy and confidentiality. Even within a single work group, there's information that is typically not disclosed, whether it's personal information or it might just be by job function, where one individual has a certain role in performing something, and that information may not be relevant and may be confidentially not disclosed to somebody else in the workgroup. So we all have different elements. It's certainly a fact that internal risks are greater than external risks by virtue of the fact that people are already in-house. So I've just mentioned that trust factor where we all like that sense of belonging. We all want to be family. And certainly, when you think of that sense of trust, it may or may not be deserved. And then you add to that the fact that internal people already have the door open. External threats, of course, are always top of mind and certainly always must be considered. But internal threats are where everybody has a key and everybody can open the door. So we always have to be vigilant. What I find has happened in the comment, "We're all family here," is something I've actually heard more than once, and it's a natural. I think auditors are commonly faced with this. As you go in to conduct your audit and you're digging around for information, of course, it ends up almost like a test of somebody else. You know, nobody wants to get an F. And if everybody's operating together, everybody's doing the very best they can. And in this environment, in more isolated environment, a more remote environment, this new normal, everybody feels like they're trying to do their best They're working hard to do a good job, many people working longer hours, and they're going to feel closest to those they're working with, their quote-unquote family. And they're going to let their guards down, whether we like it or not, from time to time, just to get the job done. So as a result, we as IS auditors, as risk management, need to keep in mind that this new environment does increase internal risk. It does mean that, yes, it's very possible people don't really want us testing and checking up on them because they know what they're doing and they've done this in the family all along and they're trying to do a good job. But there is that new reality. People are tired. People are working long hours. The privacy consideration I mentioned, each of us don't really know what additional pressures our colleagues may be under that might change behavior in a way that really is not beneficial to the business or even themselves. So those hidden reasons make it something that really needs to be monitored and checked carefully. So unknown stresses absolutely impact behavior. Additionally, sometimes there are simply misunderstandings. As we were talking about previously, everybody gets to a new truth, and technology enables that truth depending on what you like or what you don't like or what you choose to trust. If somebody starts to act on their view of what is required, if in fact, as in the article, somebody has offered their access to a colleague so that they can help out and they can get the work done, they may in fact have relinquished a control that needed to be in place that could have results that are not positive for the business. So to me, it really identifies why We're All Family Here could even be a trigger to make sure, aha, I really need to look, because internal threats are increasing where people are more on their own. They're anxious to do a good job. They want to have a control over their destiny, but they may have a misunderstanding or they may have misplaced their trust.
So shifting gears a little bit, do you feel that the changed attitudes toward risk that have resulted from the COVID-19 pandemic will stick around even after the pandemic is completely controlled?
So Abby, I have to admit, I call myself a realistic optimist. So I do feel that the risk view post this pandemic, post COVID, is going to stick around. And I think for positive reasons. Overall, I think that workforce behavior is going to be more conservative. I think that people have faced the unexpected in a variety of fronts over the past 12 months. So taking that new reality, finding out how they've progressed, especially using technology to get their job done, and perhaps having a different span of control because of what we're going through, has taught them how things have really evolved. It's not just March, if you will, of 2020. We're actually all, to a certain sense, veterans because of the new experiences that we've had. And just like the people back in the early 1900s went through influenza, I think we've all learned valuable lessons that we will perhaps worry a little bit more. We will end up being more conservative. And I view that as having a positive sense that perhaps people will have learned to seek a clear source of truth, double check on where should I be looking at access controls or security controls so that the work I do by myself or with others is as it is expected to be. The other thing I think that will linger after the pandemic is I think the workforce, and perhaps I'm being too optimistic, but I do think that the workforce will expect audit and insurance reviews to be part of that new normal. At the end of the day, the only way to know, especially as we are all working remotely, that what we're doing is on track and accurate is with feedback. And I believe that as part of our experiences over the past 12 months, the information systems auditors, risk managers, risk assurance testers have all garnered a much greater role in giving people constructive feedback. I think that with that constructive feedback, we've set up a new environment for ourselves that will be more accepting of some of the reviews, because then the benefit on the side of the workforce is that it enables a new self-determination, perhaps a new ability to do things on one's own, and perhaps a recognition by leadership that there's nothing wrong with remote work. So this balance of needs where the workforce really wants to garner some of the benefits that we've experienced over the past 12 months. And likewise, the risk assurance and audit community wants to make sure that the controls are in place, that the security is in place. I think those needs are going to converge a little bit more for the positive. And then finally, I believe that information system risk professionals and auditors should feel more confident about the significance of the work that they perform. If nothing else, the use of social media, technology, and the reality of remote work for the workforce during this pandemic have proven how important an auditing and risk management role is. We provide immeasurable feedback, but our feedback is only valuable when we take the time to listen and understand the business situation. So as we examine and audit or test the situation, whether it's a scope in IT, whether it's in the financial industry, or if it's something in terms of clinical trials for the medical community, as we stand in their shoes and understand the scope of work that we're now going to test for adequate controls, then we are going to be able to offer even better feedback, because we can speak to what the business will understand and to things and suggestions that they can adopt on behalf of the items that we have been able to uncover. So that's my view, hopefully, of our post-COVID world.
So on the subject of life after COVID, which hopefully everyone will be able to experience soon, what would you say is the number one takeaway that information systems professionals should consider in the face of any unprecedented events that might occur in the future?
In line with what we were talking about, my unbridled optimism of the post-COVID era, I think there are a couple of big takeaways. First of all, technology is more critical than ever, and that's something that is never going to go away. The second thing is the workforce doesn't always fact check. We all want to, but we just don't have time. I know oftentimes when I'm listening to something, I'm just going to go and Google fact check, and then a whole bunch of sources come up that are fact checked. That I don't even really necessarily know if that is true. So once again, the information system auditor has a crucial role, because the workforce doesn't always check and always does need another sense of reality. And then finally, I think the auditor still must always, as mentioned, hear the business view. Otherwise, the do-it-yourself attitude is going to prevail. If the business hears something that they can't relate to in terms of suggestions or improvements or issues to overcome and remediate, then they will continue. But having those couched in what can be done means that we're just going to come to a better place. So critical technology, fact-checking is not always accurate. It needs reality check from the business and enterprise perspective. And the auditor role is really important when the business understands how the issues found relate to them and what they're doing.
In your article, you have recommended a book and an investigative documentary about behavior. What do you feel is most important about reviewing other materials on the topic of workforce?
It's so easy to really get in the rut of an opinion. You look at something, you really like it, you trust it, and you move on. And then when you have that next conversation about that same subject, whether it's what you're doing at work, whether it's how you perhaps use an application, or whether you're using a certain source, you start to kind of pre-program yourself and you say, well, this is the way it is. But there's, you know, a famous phrase out there actually from what I would do with my kids. There's a show called Reading Rainbow. And at the end of that show, Lamar Burton, I think I've got the name correct, would always say a number of facts. And then he'd look into the camera and say, but don't take my word for it. And that's really where we all become more informed. So I have added a couple of resources that I found very interesting. One as a book where you could listen via Audible, you could turn the pages, and one as a documentary. Because as we start to form our opinions and we think we've got it right because we've got our sources of truth, I always think it's good to take a step back and recalibrate. And that's exactly what I did as I looked into this particular column and I thought about what is going on and what does my opinion, what is it really based on? And that's where I thought it's always better to not take my word, but to take a collective of thoughts.
Would you like to share any final thoughts about your article with our listeners?
I really appreciate the opportunity to highlight the workforce and the workforce article. I do think that people have gotten really isolated in the past 12 months, and it feels like everybody's telling us what to do, and everything's in lockdown or quarantine or who knows what. And ultimately, as we think about how we react and others react, it's almost the thing that is above and beyond everything else. Technology is really only an enabler where it should be. And controls only work when people understand them. So workforce is absolutely at the heart of everything we do. And that is really, again, in my mind, is that realistic optimist, it is the most focused and most important point, because the workforce will never go away. It can't be replaced by a program or by AI. It's really how we react to things, how we perceive things, and how we strategize in order to move forward. Understanding and considering the key aspects of the workforce just make us a better participant overall in the answers and outcomes.
Thank you again for coming on. It's been really nice to speak with you.
Yeah, thank you, Abby. It's been such a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
That's all the time we have on this episode of the podcast, but to make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.